Mobi.co. This is the Flagship Pod, a weekly podcast about the stock market, the economy, and the various market forces powering the world around you. As always, I'm your host, Peter Starr, bringing you, a very interesting moment in the market. We're seeing inflation come back a little bit hotter than we expected. We're seeing some signs that maybe the market's starting to top a little bit, but there's also some interesting life in the actual mechanics powering this market. Is the crypto rally going to sustain? Are we going to see a bull rally continue into the summer? A lot more of that to cover as we go through this. As always, I'm joined by Justin Kramer, our CEO and co-founder here at Mobi.co, as well as our chief analyst, to help us understand what's happening at this very volatile moment in the market. Thanks so much for joining us, Justin, man. Where are you calling in from, dude? What's good?
Yeah, New York. Got a finger on the pulse here in the heart of finance. So I'm happy to kind of dive through everything today that we have to discuss.
I think when we're looking at all of this too, a lot of us are trying to get a better understanding of, is this the top? Are we calling a top here? Because we're seeing the CPI come back ever so slightly hotter than what the markets wanted to see. But there's actually some interesting mechanics powering that. The personal price index also came back with a lot more spice than we wanted to see as well. And now you're kind of seeing markets overreact to bad news. We're seeing a little bit more of a sell-off off today on the Dow, but like kind of broad-based, so not isolated on any particular sector. Is this kind of what happens when rallies run a little hot here, Justin, or are we kind of seeing signs that maybe the rally pushed too far and we're going to maybe get into a deeper correction here based on what you've seen before?
Yeah, it's a bit of a complicated question. It's a good question, but it's a complicated answer. It's because everyone right now is very concerned about the price of goods in the economy, which is not the same thing as inflation. Inflation made the price of goods go up, but if inflation stays relatively flat, until income growth picks up, wages remain muted, everything still is seemingly very expensive in the economy. And so, for example, if you're making $100 and a water bottle costs $1, well, it's 1% of your salary you spend on water. If that water bottle costs now 2% or $2, now it's 2% of your salary. But if you're making $200 and that water costs $2, it's still only 1%. And so the biggest thing right now is that goods have gone up, but incomes haven't really matched it. So even if inflation levels off and that water doesn't go to $3, $4, $5, $6, $10, it still is really expensive to the average consumer. And so that inflationary issue, while it's becoming less of an issue, the elevated prices are now still a massive issue. And until, again, wages catch up, a lot of people are just like really stuck in this issue of like things are expensive and like they're kind of forced to spend money on it. That is then really exacerbated by the amount of money that the federal government is spending right now. Even though the Fed has, kept interest rates higher for longer and a lot of things they're doing, the government itself is pumping so much money into the economy that it's really keeping it afloat in what probably otherwise would be more of a recessionary type environment. So taking all that information and then looking at the market, what's really happening right now is you have an economy that's being like really held together by the US government, even though it's being kind of artificially held in place then by the Federal Reserve, which is separate from the federal government. And then past that, you have all these advances in technology, which are naturally anti-inflationary and obviously great for the companies that are able to benefit off of it. So when you add that all together, on the other side of the equation, you have like this convoluted, interesting dynamic where earnings haven't gone up a ton. So everything seems really expensive. But the hope for the future is that they will go up a ton. And so that's why things have gone up in price. On the other side, people don't feel comfortable like spending a ton of money because everything's expensive. And so you have this mixed environment where economically, for individuals, it doesn't look great, but for companies, it can look great. And you basically have this risk-off environment or risk-on environment where you combine that with the fact that everyone believes the Fed's going to lower rates soon. And that's why a big portion of why markets have gone up, that people are just putting money back into risk assets. I think going forward, like, it doesn't necessarily mean this will continue. If the Fed comes in and even decides to increase rates after they decided earlier this year they were potentially going to lower rates, everything we're seeing from a rally perspective can be flipped pretty quickly. So I know a lot of people are making money, and we've definitely recommended a lot of stocks that have been able to benefit from the rally. But a lot of the valuations now are pretty juicy, and it's gonna be hard for a lot of people to start to continue to pour money into this space until something fundamental shifts.
And you're actually seeing a lot of that play out now, audience, which is why this rally can be a little bit crazy-making if you're not watching all the right indicators. What we're seeing right now is a lot of companies actually, they did their running hot from Q4 into Q1 now. So you're seeing companies like Adobe come out and say their earnings aren't going to be as strong as their current stock level says. So you saw Adobe correct a little bit today. Exact same thing happened with Ulta Beauty. So what's happening is that the rally maybe got a little bit ahead of itself, got a little bit over its skis, and some companies have come back and said, okay, pump the brakes here, buddy. So we're seeing responsible actions from company leaders and from management. We're seeing a lot of people come out with not even like conservative guidance, just guidance that doesn't match the current level of alpha the stock has. So you can't even call what's happening to Adobe a correction because it was just overbought in the first place. Honestly, we're encouraged by this, but we don't want to see any kind of like irrational behavior. But people are trying to find, okay, what's the next Nvidia? I want to get the same level upside I got from all of these chip makers. Who else is going to do that? So they find anything even tangentially related to this AI revolution. And audience, one thing we're going to get into too as we look into our stock outlook is what actually is happening in this AI space and who's actually going to be winning, at least in this phase of the AI market. Because even the infrastructure players like Dell they're massively above our price target, you know, only 3 months after we've posted an update on them. And so the main thing is we're just trying to see exactly how much real money can be made right now as we project out what we're seeing in this AI space, because we're seeing genuine use cases for AI models that are genuinely deflationary. Like we're seeing profits absolutely skyrocket at firms like Meta and other places that are big enough and have data sets enough. So that's the main question we keep asking ourselves. Where's the actual alpha right now? And is there anything that's not drastically overbought? And that's what you're going to sort of see sussed out here. But Justin, let's make sure before we get into like specific stock outlooks here and thinking about how we're looking at the equities market right now, I want to pull back and I want to look real quick at the inflationary outlook, because I feel like we're at this pivotal moment. Next week is going to be the FOMC meeting. A lot of our audience has been curious about exactly where you go from here if inflation's still like hovering infuriatingly at 3%. You're Jerome Powell. Like, do you see any reason to cut rates now, cut rates early, so to speak, like given the composition you're seeing in the inflationary environment?
I mean, this is something that we've been saying for a while. Like, you know, things are really expensive right now from an inflation perspective, from a goods perspective. And valuations are running hot. And so if I'm Jerome Powell right now, you know, I'm faced with one of three options. If I lower rates too early, I risk reigniting inflation and making the problem that already exists today that much worse, which is they've stated is their clear mandate they don't want to do. So I don't think they're going to be incentivized to lower rates anytime, not anytime soon, but as soon as they first indicated, maybe earlier this year. The second option is to keep things status quo and kind of let the data continue to come in, which is what they've basically been doing. And the third option, depending on how inflation and things are going, is actually to raise rates. You know, we're not anticipating that they do so, but it's definitely not necessarily out of the cards. I think a lot of people thought that inflation would be, you know, a monster we more or less could defeat at this point. But you look at the most recent charts and still things are still skyrocketing out of control. Homeowners insurance, car insurance, you know, they're up 20-30% from last year still, even though, you know, across the board, inflation's only up like 3% and change. So, I mean, that's still above the Fed's target. They want to be closer to 2%. And, you know, not to talk about inflation for 30 minutes, but this matters because ultimately the economy runs on debt. And so unless rates continue, or if rates go up, it's going to be hard for companies to grow. And if companies can't grow, earnings are ultimately going to be impacted. And if earnings are impacted, stock market's going to go down. So these rates have really, really wide-reaching effects for the market. So ultimately, that's one of the key indicators we've been watching for the last 2 years is, you know, how does the Fed set rates? How does that impact earnings? And then how do those earnings ultimately impact the market? Again, right now, a lot of that's being exacerbated by what's going on at the economy, but we are about to step into an election. And so anything that's been going on from the federal government is obviously subject to change pretty quick.
And that's one of those things, too, where like prices have gone up so much and, you know, obviously consumers are hurting. We're watching consumer spending slow down here in America, not necessarily fall, but, you know, literally slow down. And the main question is, just how much of a consumer spending slowdown do we need to fully get inflation under control? That's also why you saw the market rip on the initial inflation report, despite the fact it came back a little bit hotter, because the things that are driving inflation now are things that the Fed measures in kind of a goofy way. Specifically, housing inflation, rent and housing in general, is measured kind of in the year before, and it tends to lag the actual market, whereas various economists have pointed out via micro studies that we're seeing rents cool off a lot in the last 3 months specifically, and so we're going to stop seeing that huge aspect of what drive inflation more. There's been a 20% bump in auto insurance costs just because of, there's a lot of factors driving that up too. It's actually pretty fascinating. We need to do a whole article on it, but that seems to be more of like a temporary spike, not a gigantic spike. Whereas what Justin talked about, homeowners insurance, that may be something that sustains here as we enter into a period where there's, you know, just there's extra flooding, there's kind of more storms. We'll see if this next year plays out the same way it did. We were in an El Nino year before, lots of extra storms there. So a lot of really interesting factors kind of powering inflation. Above all, wages are growing above the rate of inflation, right? So the thing we kind of need to maintain consumer spending may end up adding to the problem. So getting comments from Jerome Powell is going to be absolutely gigantic, because we're going to get a better sense of the Fed's confidence about inflation as well. Getting any kind of outlook on their timeline when it comes to rate cuts is going to be huge, because even though we're pumping a lot of money into certain sectors of the economy, the brakes are still being pumped really hard, and you need kind of like that broad spectrum monetary policy to allow growth. But at the same time, growing too fast, too hot, just brings inflation right back. So really complicated way of threading the needle here, a little less confidence, but at the same time, there are certain factors in the market that are encouraging, and maybe it's going to be winners and losers season for longer, which is great for us, since what a lot of what we do is stock picking. So it's a picker's market. We love to see that. So as we're thinking about that, Justin, we kind of get into sort of the next phase of that, which is our stock outlook here. So obviously, we're concerned about certain names being overbought. When we're looking sort of broadly, you know, with the stock picks we put out every week, like what are the kind of frameworks we're looking for now in terms of determining whether or not a name is overbought or not? Are we still picking AI names, or are we going like full defense mode here?
No, I mean, we're, you know, it's very selective. So like obviously, maybe what we selected earlier this year versus now has changed so much because the stock prices have run up so much. So like you look at NVIDIA, for example, like it's up so significantly. You zoom out, you look at the chart, it's hard to like justify the valuation it's at. Again, the thinking is that this growth is going to happen in perpetuity. And we're looking at like, you know, a moment in history where things are changing from an AI perspective. And we definitely believe that. Some of this stuff is hyped up, of course, but this is fundamentally a huge, huge shift in the way like humans ultimately do business, and you can kind of see the writing on the wall for a lot of different professions and ultimately what will happen. But long story short, some AI names we like, some are overhyped. In the app, we really talk through specifically which ones and price targets and so on and so forth. But yes, we definitely are starting to get defensive on some names. Utilities are starting to be more attractive, especially if they lower rates. You know, we're also looking at some energy names. We just released a pick this week via Energy Transfer, which is a company that basically once the oil is up out of the ground, they transfer it to the end location. And while that probably sounds like the most boring business in the world, to some people, they're actually, you know, again, I don't want to get into specifics. If you want to check it out, go into the app. But they ultimately have a massive, massive presence in today, what is ultimately the oil market, and also the future of oil going forward. And so getting defensive in names like this when other valuations may seem out of control is definitely important. And honestly, that's the reason, like, you actually look at the best sector month to date so far, and energy is actually the best name, which would probably surprise most people.
And that's honestly a wild place to be in, because when rates got completely out of hand towards the sort of end of last year, energy and utility names got absolutely just crushed. So what we're excited to see is a lot of kind of investment from 2023 begin to pay off in the energy space, and that's what you're beginning to see. So a lot of companies saw the writing on the wall with higher interest rates and just said, okay, we're going to double down. We're going to be in a period of weakness no matter what, so let's invest as well. There's other really great utility names that are now seeing a bunch of their investments pay off, and Energy Transfer specifically is now seeing their big bet they placed on West Texas's Permian Basin pay off in a big way. They are poised to just absolutely take over and rock out in terms of just getting the oil from the last big oil boom in America to the Gulf Coast, which is awesome. And they also have a huge advantage in natural gas, which then gives them an advantage in carbon capture. Of course, you can learn more about that by, you know, checking us out over at app.mobi.co. Sign up for a free trial, folks. Check us out. See what we're doing with our long-term perspective. We also are getting our daily sort of market pulse report out every day at 9:30 a.m. As soon as the market opens, you kind of get that fresh perspective of what's actually happening in the market the minute the market's open, so you're prepared for the rest of your day. Love, you know, talking up our app, but don't want to like have an actual advertisement in here as well. To give you another preview to show you that it's not just like, okay, we're going full defense, there are some names who are utilizing the AI narrative really effectively and have kind of been doing the AI narrative for longer than they've let on, and you can kind of see that in their development. And one of the biggest surprises for us in our analysis has been Uber, just seeing how much they have completely transformed the way they do operations in the last year. Our other big report this week was on Uber. Not going to give you our specifics on our price target or anything. Check us out at app.mobi.co for that. But one thing we're seeing is just how much they have been using their sort of global dominance to build as many different AI models as possible that are now getting their algorithms so efficient that their product is so much more profitable. But a more profitable product at Uber is also a product people actually want to use because you find drivers a lot faster, there's less bugs, there's less drops. And so Uber makes more money, people like the product more, and therefore their gross bookings and mobility grew 30% in the last year, which is insane when you realize that that basis was like $50 billion before. So they are just finding staggering amounts of gains at their scale already, and they're only just going to become more profitable now that they're taking all of what they learned in optimizing mobility in 2023 and bringing those profits over to delivery and their freight product. And then we haven't even talked about self-driving. Like, the sky is the limit at Uber. They have completely transformed. It's an amazing story. Make sure you check that out within the app itself. We're just really excited to see that. So that's what we have to really point out here, is that right now we are at the macro AI revolution. The only people who are going to win with AI have an army of developers who are literally training tens of thousands of AI models to make tens of millions of decisions within algorithms every single second. And that's where you're going to find the actual scale you need to win in here. So that's what I want you to really think about. We're seeing some small to medium business case examples where AI is deflationary, but it's few and far between. It's mostly in media right now. Duolingo is a huge standout there, where they've kind of just made better language lessons using AI. And so that's what we're really thinking about here. So we are beginning to see a lot of these different forces become genuinely deflationary as well. So it's really the most bizarre situation to be in too. And of course, Justin, right in the middle of it all, crypto popped. Bitcoin's back at all-time highs, and I still don't even know if I want to start selling again. Like, I'm very profitable. I'm very happy to like finally be in profits in Bitcoin again. But it's like, can I convince myself to sell? Like, is the ETF rally really here? Did institutional money do it? Like, what is happening now that it's pulling back a little bit? Should we sell now, or should we kind of hold the line? Are we going to 100K in 2024, Justin Kramer?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest narrative we've been watching now for actually a pretty long time. Something we've been writing about for years is a lot of these former rallies have been retail-led. This, and like we always said, what if institutions can get in? They never had access or a really good way to hold the security. And now like we're starting to see what I believe to be the early waves of that. Having said that, crypto is a risk on asset. So if the market loses its footing and stumbles, crypto should stumble with it. And I think the biggest thing that we're looking at right now is, again, like everything, prices relative to the upside. So you think about the inherent risks relative to the upside. Can crypto go to 100? Can it go to more for this current bull market? Easily. It can keep ripping. But the biggest thing that we're watching for, again, is the prices relative to the risks. And when we look at it now, there's a lot of still macro risks on the table that have nothing to do with crypto itself. I know a lot of people talk about the halving, a lot of these other events that and the ETFs that is causing go up, and that I don't doubt. But again, people want to put money into crypto, yes, as a digital store of wealth, but as also a way to grow their wealth. And so while I'm fundamentally still and always have been bullish on the long-term viability of Bitcoin specifically, right now it's definitely a little bit of a, from a risk-reward perspective, a little bit hard to digest. I think, again, it inevitably will crash, whether that happens in a day, a month, a year, 10 years. I don't think anyone can really be in a position to say that right now. But what we can be in a position to say is once it does crash, it'll likely recover. You know, it has a proven history now at this point of, again, that digital store of wealth, and then in a risk on environment, a place where people want to get excess returns. So I think, long story short for us, we're holding the positions we do have, not really initiating any new ones unless there's any sort of strong pullbacks or good entry points. And then during the next crash, whether that be in, you know, a year, a day, 10 years, who knows, that's when we'll continue to really add to our position. And that's, you know, as investors, we want to buy low and sell high. We don't want to be buying high and selling low. So that's really the way we're opportunistically going to do it. If we end up missing out on a little bit of upside, that's fine because, again, everything is risk adjusted. So we don't want to be taking an insane amount of risk for a limited amount of upside.
Exactly. And I think one thing too, audience, you've been asking a lot about is just outside of Bitcoin, like where else is this rally going? The main thing I want to point out first is, of course, we have a bunch of catalysts coming up too. This institutional money, first of all, is going to be ultimately stabilizing. These ETFs are going to make it harder for Bitcoin to move as erratically as it has in the past. Of course, we're still seeing big price swings like we are during our recording where we saw Bitcoin drop 10% in a day. That's pretty normal even with institutional money. But after that, we're going to begin seeing other catalyst events like the Bitcoin halving. And then we're going to start seeing the altcoin season really pick up. Those are very multivariate in nature. So next week, we're going to bring you a conversation with another Mobi analyst, just talking about all the ins and outs of both the alternative space, what's happening in Web3, our NFTs back, is Solana going to beat Ethereum, did Ethereum just kill Solana, so on and so forth. Stay tuned for that next week. It's going to be really exciting as we begin, you know, doing as best we can, sort of like a VC-style analysis of crypto again, now that we're seeing a broader thaw to the crypto winter. Otherwise, there's been a lot to cover here, and I'm amazed we've already like been here for 20 minutes, but Justin Kramer, CEO, co-founder here at Mobi.co, anything else you wanted to cover before we go ahead and read the credits here, or did we manage to nail it here today, man?
No, I think short, sweet, concise, we did a good job. I'm happy where we wrap this up. If there's questions, as always, feel free to reach out.
Sounds great, Justin. Really appreciate your time. And audience, that seems like a great place for us to go ahead and end things here. So just so you know, this podcast is produced, hosted, and voiced by me, Peter Starr. This podcast is a production of Mobi.co, which is led by our analyst team, headed up by Justin Kramer, our CEO, co-founder, and chief analyst. If you ever have any questions for us, you can always email us at hello@mobi.co. Otherwise, check out what we're doing every day over at app.mobi.co. Sign up for a free trial and get a better sense of how the markets are moving day to day. If you want to see more of our day-to-day ideas, check us out over at Instagram or sign up for our daily newsletter to get a really good pulse of what's actually powering the price action in these markets. But either way, audience, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we like to leave you with peace, love, and incremental gains. Everyone be well. Thank you so much.